This all started in museums and galleries. Now it's in classrooms, in country towns.
This should not be here.
It's a human being in a box.
This is the stuff of empires.
There is a great betrayal.
We're not slaves, we're African.
It's the stuff the British stole.
I just don't believe that. It just does not stand up.
From ABC Australia and CBC Podcasts, 6 brand new podcast episodes for free worldwide, available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Q. Welcome to the show. Thanks a lot for listening. So a few weeks ago, I don't know if you paid attention to this, but that movie Anatomy of a Fall won one of the big awards at the Oscars. It won Best Original Screenplay. That's after it won Best International Picture at the Golden Globes, and it won Best Screenplay there too. And it won, I mean, a few months ago, the Palme d'Or, the big prize at the Cannes Film Festival. This is a film that's winning a lot of awards. And that's interesting because it's a film that doesn't have a lot of resolution in it. It's a film that you can walk out of the theater if you watch it next to your best friend. Someone comes up to you and says, hey, do you think the person in the film murdered her husband? You could say yes. And your friend who watched the exact same film at the exact same time could say no. Let me explain. Anatomy of a Fall is the story of a novelist named Sandra who's put on trial for the murder of her husband after he falls to his death in their home. The couple, they live in this remote sort of cabin in the French Alps. The only witness to what actually happened is their son, Daniel, but Daniel is visually impaired. So yeah, as the movie goes on and Sandra goes on trial in France, you, as sort of an audience member, you end up in the jury seat yourself. You're learning about their relationship. You're learning about the relationship with the kid. You're learning about how the trial is impacted by Sandra not being someone who was originally from France. And you, as a jury member, start to question what's true and what's not. I got to sit down with the person who made Anatomy of a Fall, Justine Trier, back in September when the film had its Canadian premiere in Toronto and before all the massive awards. Heads up, so Justine's first language is French, not English. So she brought in Assia Torquier-Zoberman as her translator. Here's our conversation. When you are showing the film, are there any nerves at this stage?
Oui, toujours. Je pense que je suis toujours un peu nerveuse.
Yes, I'm still always nervous, and especially going to different countries, it's always a bit of a gamble how people react to the film, but I'm starting to learn to trust that there's a lot of love around the film.
Are you paying attention to the reactions? Are you paying attention to gasps? Are you paying attention to...
Non, je n'ai pas revu le film depuis Cannes.
No, I haven't seen the film in a screening room with people since Cannes. I know it too well, and it's difficult for me to watch it again.
For people who haven't seen it yet, let's talk a little bit about it. Tell me a little bit about what inspired the film.
Je pense que le moment où j'ai vraiment...
So I think the moment that I knew that the film was there, or that I really can say that it began to take its own, was when I had the idea of this child that would be at the center of the courtroom and who would see his parents' life and relationship dissected. And that's when I knew that I had the idea was something that I hadn't seen before myself.
But what about the dynamic itself? Like, it's an interesting dynamic that I haven't seen in a lot of films before. You have an author, a woman author, who is married to a man author. She's, you know, far more successful, far more famous than him. There's a dynamic there. He takes care of a lot of the childcare. There's resentment brewing between them. Talk to me a little bit about the dynamic you wanted to place between the two.
Il parle vraiment de la relation des genres, c'est ça, entre.
Oui, la dynamique entre eux.
Je pense que c'était vraiment assez naturel pour moi d'écrire ça.
I would say it was quite a natural thing to write for me. I was aware that there was a kind of reversal of the gender norms in that dynamic that you name. And for me, I think I wrote something that was quite close to my way of being and that I was aware also as a spectator that I hadn't seen so much in films, this female character who is so unapologetic for her way of taking up space, for the way that she lives and for the success that she has. So this norm reversal was important to me.
When you say that it was something close to your own life, tell me more about that. What do you mean by that?
Not c'est pas ma vie du tout.
It's not my life that I've written out in any way. I should make that clear. But I mean that I have children, and that from the moment I became pregnant, I knew that it was non-negotiable for me to think of life as other than a question of parity between me and my partner, and that the equality and the reciprocity was very central.
I'm still trying to understand that. So the two central characters have lives outside of their own lives until they have children, and they're able to navigate that equality much better until they have children. Is that what you mean?
Je pense que en tout cas l'enfant crée une
I would say unfortunately yes, that when a child is born, some kind of the balance of whatever reciprocity was found tends to go off kilter, and in the relationships that I see around me and the couples that I'm around who have children, it's very rare to find a situation in which one person doesn't end up eating the other to some degree, and because for me a couple is this place of a utopia, I wanted to dramatize exactly this struggle to try and find a way to withstand the pressure of that loss of balance between people. And maybe in this case, what I showed is the failure of that, but it's the attempt still.
That failure manifests itself through a question in the film. While you're watching the dynamics between the relationships, you are also wondering whether this the central character murdered her husband or whether he died by suicide. And you chose to tell that story sort of in one space. Large swaths of the film take place in the courtroom. What was interesting to you about telling this story through the courtroom?
En fait, pour moi, l'endroit du tribunal est un endroit.
For me, the courthouse is the place where we come to reappropriate our stories as stories, and in the same time, it's the place in which we kind of there's a kind of delirium that happens around the question of the narrative coherency of one's life, and it is both the place where supposedly truth is supposed to emerge, and yet, of course, it becomes the place of fiction, and so all of these tensions are at stake in what my interest is. And I think then more generally in courthouse dramas, whether in cinema or in reality, I'm also interested in the way in which it's a place in which society at large comes to work out some of its moral quandaries and dilemmas, and to project back onto itself what a woman should be, what a man should be, what a relationship should be.
En fait, pour résumer, je pense qu'il y a vraiment l'idée que cette femme.
And so to summarize, I would say that because this character is free both in her writing and in her sexuality, what comes to be judged because of the lack of evidence towards the question of whether or not she murdered her husband is her entire way of life, and her freedom is really what's on trial here in the end.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm sorry, but I don't know. You come here, okay, with your opinion, and you tell me who Samuel was and what we were going through. But what you say is just—it is just a little part of the whole situation, you know.
I mean, talk to me about. Given that the main character is famous, a famous author, there's another dynamic at play here. There's significant press attention given to the trial of whether or not she murdered her husband. Talk to me about that decision.
En fait, ce qui m'intéressait plus que le fait qu'elle soit connue, je pense, c'est l'idée que.
So I think more than the fact that she was famous, I was interested in the fact that she is a writer and yes, a successful one. In that, and a stranger at that, stranger to France, so that she speaks multiple languages, and so that in this way, there's this assumption in this overall mastery that she has, that she might be better able to dupe us, or that she might be more duplicitous in that way. And so this capacity that is assumed upon her that she can transform her identity and make her more dangerous for that is what I was interested in creating her as a successful author.
Yeah, I did notice there were moments where the prosecutor would speak her English back to her in sort of a dismissive way.
Oui, moi je pense que le français en fait.
Yeah, I think that when she speaks French, it's the moments where she speaks French is the moments when she feels in control or where she has mastered what she is trying to say. And the switches into English occur when she is somehow overtaken, and for her, English is the language of impulse or emotion. And the prosecutor, in some way, is always trying to corner her around that.
Mm. The child in the film, Daniel. He's in a challenging situation. In watching the trial of his mother about whether his mother murdered his father, there is at the same time just the trauma of having of your father having died, the trauma of having it be a spectacle about whether your mother is guilty. But what I found interesting was the having to learn about your parents' inner lives in a way that you don't typically find out as a child. Can you talk to me a little bit about that? And I heard through some research that was inspired by your own sort of relationship or your own viewing of your own daughter.
Oui, quand j'ai commencer à penser au film, en fait, je me souviens.
I did start to think about the film in a way when I saw my daughter, who at the time was around 10 years old, and I started wondering how much she knew about me, about the life that I'd had before having her, but also about our family history. And I think around that time, around 10 years old, it's a very transitional moment where a sort of opinion, a capacity for opinion starts to develop in quite a strong way. And the question became, how does one bring a child in to their own history? How does one transmit that history onto them? So it was quite a complex sentiment for me. And I ended up writing, of course, a script that's very far from my life, but it was very much influenced by that. And then to come back to the film itself, I think Daniel begins with this absolute trust and faith in his mother. And then this doubt arises. And in the end, he finds himself in this position where he has to make a decision. And that's something that I myself have known in my own childhood at some point, where I also had was confronted with two sort of differing stories and had to pick between them.
I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. More of my conversation with the filmmaker Justine Triet coming up.
One of the best shows of the year, according to Apple, Amazon and Time, is back for another round. This season, we're diving deep into some of McCartney's most beloved songs. Yesterday, Band on the Run, Hey Jude. And McCartney's favourite song in his entire catalogue. Here, there and everywhere. Listen to Season 2 of McCartney, A Life in Lyrics on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
Everything we've talked to up until this point has been about the film as sort of an exploration of relationship dynamics and gender dynamics and societal gender dynamics. The film does also revolve around a question about whether or not the main character, this woman, murdered her husband. Our producer, Glory, who produced the segment, and I walked into my office after we watched the film with completely different conclusions about whether or not she murdered her husband. Does that make you happy?
Yes, of course. Yes, it was my goal when we were quand on était en montage.
Yes, of course. In the editing room, I was really obsessed with finding a way for the audience to be to not be on one side or the other. I was trying to find that tightrope.
Why?
Je pense que moi, en tant que spectatrice, les affaires qui
m'intéressent. As a spectator, that's what I'm interested in both in cinema and in reality, in courthouse sort of enigmas. Even once the trial has concluded, when you're still not sure, that's the things that I'm fascinated by.
Now, looking for a stranger who walks in, kills him while you were sleeping right above, and Daniel was up for a walk is a shitty strategy. Samuel had no enemies.
Stop. I did not kill him.
That's not the point.
You're interested in there not being a binary good and, yeah. and a binary bad. And so it's intentional that we are supposed to sort of draw our own conclusions and make our own decisions.
Oui, complètement. Alors, il y a des choses qu'on ne peut pas dire. I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah, yeah, good point.
But oui, bien sûr, je pense que c'est, comment dire, c'est vraiment presque la chose la plus intéressante du film, en fait.
I think for me the most interesting thing of the film, without wanting to spoil anything, is the way in which the child becomes the deciding agent, who is to decide and then live with what he decides happened. And I was much more interested in that than to create a kind of twist ending that would have been very well designed, as we see often in TV shows.
I didn't wait for a post-credit scene to find out, you know, who did it.
Thank you.
What is it like to hear your name spoken when you win the Palme d'Or?
C'était complètement irréel.
So it was completely surreal. So of course there was a lot of joy at being awarded by this jury in particular, in which Julia Ducournau was sitting, who had won the same award the year prior, and to come after Jane Campion. Also, all of that was extremely joyful for me, and to be the third woman to have this prize was exceptional. Which is to say, on the moment I didn't feel very much. It took about a month and a half for me to start to register what had happened.
I'm glad you mentioned that you were the third woman to win, because that sparked a large conversation about, I think even Jane Fonda even said when she started going to Cannes, there were just no women involved, and that was sort of accepted as the norm. I think it's very easy, and we've talked a lot about this on this show, to have the conversation around why that's bad. It's much more challenging to have the conversation around what are the solutions. And when I was doing my research, I found you talking a little bit about the importance of quotas. Quotas are being an important thing in making sure there's representation in film. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Je pense que les choses ne viennent pas naturellement. On a
my view is that, as we have seen, it doesn't happen naturally in the history of cinema, but just also in history at large. The evolution of such things doesn't just occur. Before Me Too, it was sort of seen as a non-topic, and it wasn't really something that people were paying attention to, and then it became an undeniably important subject, and I believe that until we have a 50% parity, but it, everywhere in the juries and at every level, it's not just going to happen on its own, and yet I still hope that eventually it would be able to become a non-topic again, and that we could, you know, be seen as expressing something universal rather than a kind of niche of women's movies. But that's in a sort of a second moment. And until then, I think quotas are necessary for the change to occur.
To stay on the topic of sort of the of what happened after you won the Palme d'Or, you know, I watched your speech where you talked about something that, of course, we in Canada were paying a lot of attention to, which was around the legislation around pensions in France, the ensuing protests, which became larger about protests, the larger than about pensions, became a large sort of class discussion or class rebellion against the French government. You then, in the speech, sort of pivoted from there to how this relates to a conversation around the funding of cinema.
La marchandisation de la culture que le gouvernement néolibéral défend est en train de casser l'exception culturelle française.
To go back to what we talked about earlier in the interview, we talked about the attention of the press on the couple in the film. I read more about your speech at the Palme d'Or almost than I read about the film itself. What was the experience like of making that statement, of having the press accurately or inaccurately interpret what you said? What was the experience like of after you made that statement?
En fait, en réalité, je pense qu'après ça s'est équilibré. Parce que
I would say that eventually things sort of balanced out because I eventually got quite a lot of attention on the film. But it's true that in that first instant, that speech and that intervention was very much talked about. And I think for me, it was the greatest experience of misogyny that I've ever had. My speech was basically identical to a speech Ken Loach gave a couple of years prior, and he'd just been applauded, except in his home country. But generally he was received with applause. And I was just expected, especially being the third woman, to just sort of give a nice little speech of thanks. And so, of course, I stand by what I said very much. I would have felt very much lacking in solidarity and not in my country had I not spoken as such. Then, yes, my words were in some cases misrepresented. So I guess there is a parallel between me and my character in this way, in which I think I did get a taste of what it feels like to express oneself freely and to then be appropriated and misrepresented.
Are you worried about the future of French cinema? I ask that because, especially in Canada, especially in Quebec, there is a great affection for, and it's a very important tradition to the country.
La France est un pays génial pour faire des films. Évidemment, on est l'exception.
So I would say that, you know, I'm aware and I just kind of wanted to laud how importantly, how great France is to make films. I know it's the system that we have is really exceptional and it comes from a cultural exception and we are envied for this worldwide. And so what I said, which isn't, you know, which I didn't invent and which so many other people say, is just that it is being threatened. And it's not just threatened by the government, it's also threatened by the new forms of competition with the streaming platforms and the demand is very different than it was 20 years ago. So really it was really a call for protection that in the process, of course, is the naming of this threat and is a call for care for this way of making things that we shouldn't take for granted.
Et par rapport à la diversité, quoi, c'est-à-dire que c'est l'idée de...
And in particular, what is so exceptional and what must be protected is the diversity in modes of fabrication. It's the way in which it's a system that allows for both very big and very small films to be made thanks to each other. And so, of course, it's about protecting the possibility of smaller ones.
I don't expect you to have an answer, but this film's getting a lot of conversations around the Oscars and it's getting a lot of talk around that. But first off, how are you feeling about that? And secondly, given everything we've talked about so far, is there greater meaning that this film would be considered at that sort of higher, I don't even say higher level, that different level?
Ça m'impressionne, évidemment. Ce qui m'impressionne, c'est d'être vue par les gens que j'admire.
So I'm very impressed or intimidated by the fact of being seen by so many people that I admire is really where it's at. It's also, of course, very pleasant. It was never an aim for me. It's not something that I ever considered even possible. And the anecdote to that effect is that when I was writing the film with my co-writer, I kept on saying to him, that I was writing my most radical film that no one was ever going to see, and that after this I would make up for it by working on a TV show.
To win money, you know.
Yeah, yeah, law and order, yeah. More courtrooms. Well, I can't begin to tell you how much we all enjoyed watching the film. And
thank you.
Even just when we were waiting, people were asking me how it is. They've heard so much about it. And thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks so much to you.
That's my conversation with Justine Triet. Her film Anatomy of a Fall won Best Screenplay at this year's Academy Awards. You can watch it now on Amazon Prime. The other conversation we have up today is with the Nova Scotian filmmaker Fawzia Mirza. Fawzia is from Sydney, Cape Breton. She and her family used to have to drive hours and hours and hours to get to the nearest South Asian grocery store. And while they were there, they wouldn't just get groceries. They'd get films as well. And those classic Bollywood films that she picked up inspired her to make her own film, and she's here to talk about her debut feature film. Go check that out wherever you're looking for new Canadian film. Go check that out wherever you got this podcast. We'll see you soon, later on.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.